welcome back to Time Shifters Podcast. Once again, I am here in studio with Matt Flynn. Welcome back, Matt.
Hello.
This is Christopher, in case I didn't mention it.
Who else would you be?
Are any new listeners or anything like that? Before we get into this week's episode, I do want to mention a couple things kind of left over from the last time we talked. We talked some Star Trek. I wanted to make some corrections because I realized I threw out some episode titles that ended up being wrong. I was suggesting to you a couple episodes of the one with Frank Gorshin that I couldn't remember the name of the episode. And then later on, I told you that you should look into Let That Be Your Last Battlefield because I thought that was the one with the big war message.
All right.
The Frank Gorshin episode is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. And the episode with the big war message I couldn't think of is A Taste of Armageddon. So if there's any really good Star Trek fans listening that picked up on that, don't be mad at me.
Put your torches and pitchforks down.
Put them down. I realize my mistake. I've made the correction. Okay. Going back a couple episodes where we talked about TVs, the future of television and all that good stuff, I bought a Roku.
Yeah, I was following that. You were posting about it.
I got a Roku Express. That is pretty damn awesome.
Is it?
I really like it.
I'm still just going off the smart TV and then just pulling apps off of my phone. So I haven't gone full Roku yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, my smart TV, I have a smart TV, but it seems I've got like an LG, and if anyone's listening and can correct me if I'm wrong, but LG doesn't apparently play well with others because their apps that are available on the actual TV seem to be limited. You can't just like get the CW app or something
right, like
that. And I can get the CW app on my phone, but then I can't seem to get my phone to actually broadcast to the TV.
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I went ahead and finally got the broke down and got the Roku. Well, broke down. It was like $30 for the Roku Express. It's a small investment.
Is it the one-time price or is there like
a
subscription?
Yeah, okay. Right. That's there are channels that you can, streaming channels you can select that within those channels you may have to rent a movie or something or a TV show. I'm sticking to pretty much whatever I can find free.
Right.
Cuz that just makes the investment really easy. It's $30 and that's one time, and you plug in a TV. It's powered from USB, so I actually can plug the USB into the TV, and so the TV powers the Roku. I don't even have to like drag extension cords to the wall or anything. So it's really slick, and I've been finding some great stuff. There's some neat channels on there. The Dorado Film channel is really cool. A lot of Euro spy and Italian westerns and stuff.
You're probably watching more TV now than with your cable box, which is what happened to me.
I am.
So are you going to cut the cord now?
I would love to cut the cord. I think I could cut the cord pretty easily. Like I may have brought up in the discussion, it's my wife with some of the shows that she likes where she's not sure if they'd be easily accessible or available online. And there are a lot of the more talk show kind of orientated stuff, the things on the Oprah Network and things like. I don't know. I don't know if
those end up on YouTube the next day. So.
Yeah, it's true. So I think I could convince her, if I could show her that this is how you could watch it, I think we could probably cut the cord, except for the fact that we're horrible about getting to actually watching things, and things don't stay online forever.
Yeah,
I noticed even the CW, their shows, they have about four episodes.
Five at a time, I think it is.
I see four. Like Supergirl, I see four. There's four up, and the fourth is expiring in a couple days or something.
Oh, so they changed it. Because, last season it was always like you could do five at a time.
Interesting. Yeah, no, maybe it varies depending on the show
maybe.
Or who knows. But so there is that. So you have like a month, maybe a month and a half to watch something, and then that's it. So we got to be a little bit better about actually watching the stuff, I guess, if we're going to do that. But I could see a time where we could cut the cord coming up. I guess that is all of the past episode kind of stuff I wanted to tribute, little items I wanted to mention. Of course, if you have any comments or anything, reach out to us at timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, most other pod catchers. You can usually find us somewhere. If there's one out there you know of or some network you think we should be on, let me know. I think that's it. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss 2003's Carnival.
enjoy movies like Carnival of Souls, The Mole People, Black Sunday, and The Tingler? Do you find yourself late at night reading magazines such as Film Max, Chiller Theater, or Monster Bash? Do you love vintage television programs like Sky King, Outer Limits, and The Time Tunnel? Do you find yourself surfing the net looking for the next monster movie festival or expo? Do you enjoy hearing anecdotes, cinematic details, and unusual insights into some of your favorite movies? If you answered yes to any of the above, you are encouraged to join your host, Vince Rotolo, as he examines some of the latest horror, sci-fi, and cult theatrical releases, new DVDs to add to your collection, and of course, the old classics, both good and bad. He even interviews people throughout B-Moviedom. So tune into B-MovieCast at bmoviecast.com.
Hey everyone, thanks for sticking with us. All right, yeah, 2003. I sent Matt all the way back to the 60s so he could learn about the 23rd century.
Figure that out.
His suggestion was for me to go back into the early 2000s so I can learn about Dust Bowl era America.
Yes.
And I watched some of the HBO series Carnival. I got a chance to watch the first whole season, and then I got a couple episodes into the second season. So we're going to have a little discussion. I'm sure Matt's got some questions here for me, just like I had for him with the Star Trek. So pretty much going to let him take it away.
Well, the first thing I just want to ask is, what was just your... we'll stick to the first season. What was your overall impression?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me start with this, too. I asked you if I... What about Star Trek? I asked you if you had any expectations going into it.
Sure.
Because you had never watched any Trek before. You only knew it by it being around. I didn't know anything about
nothing.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about Carnival. I don't know if I'd even heard of it back in the early 2000s, if I'd even heard of it.
Even when it was out, because it was on HBO, it was one of those things that if you didn't see it or you didn't know someone who saw it, you didn't know anything about it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that was fairly early in the original series era of HBO.
It was kind of, it was early because now it's, if, you know, if there's an HBO show, you're either watching it or you're out of the conversation. Whereas back then it was more of, they had The Sopranos, they had Sex and the City, and that was, I mean, in terms of like a reputation, that was kind of it.
Okay.
I don't know where Deadwood popped up.
I think that was a little bit more recent. That's within the last decade, I think, isn't it? Deadwood?
I'm not sure. But it was around that time. So it was kind of like those two real big shows, and then there was everything else. And so everything else just kind of got clumped together, even though everything else was very good. But it was – the ball was still like really trying to just start picking up momentum. So, yeah. If you didn't watch it, you didn't know anything about it.
Alrighty, so there you go. So I went into it a little bit kind of the same way that you went into the Star Trek. My expectations, being that it was an HBO program, and with the HBO programs that I knew of that have come since, like The Sopranos, Deadwood, that sort of thing. So I was expecting something that was definitely had a little bit more adult themes, and I was expecting it to be a fairly smart and smartly written series. I think it fell flat on just about everything for me. I didn't find the themes to be any that much different than what you can see on any network. There was, of course, a little bit more language and some nudity, but honestly, that almost felt like it was written to go on any network, and then they found out HBO was going to have them. And you could almost like hear the scritch, scritch, scritch on the script. She undresses to reveal negligee to change it to she undresses to reveal bare breasts.
Sure.
And as far as the writing and everything, I found it to be kind of maybe this is just me looking back at it. Maybe then it was ahead of its time, but look, watching it now, it seems very common. Place.
Sure.
Maybe a little disappointed in that, and that might be just because I'm watching it, 13 years after it aired. But I still found it interesting, the story itself. But it did, for me, have the one problem, and it's not alone in this. This isn't the only series that it's done this. But I think my issue with it is the fact that the entire series kind of depended on it, was that just no one answers a question.
That's true.
No one admits to anything. There's always that, what's wrong? Well, if I told you, it would solve the problem. So I'm not going to tell you so we can go another episode.
Yeah. I feel I hate being an explainer, but I feel the reason for that is you're dealing with the time period of, and also what they're dealing with. So, you know, somebody asks Ben what's wrong. He's not going to explain it because they think he's crazy or that he's lying. Somebody asks Jonesy what's wrong. He's not going to say it because he's a man and his problems have to deal with his feelings for a woman. And he's not going to admit what his feelings are because he's a man.
All right, true
especially
enough.
Back then. Like, even now it's hard for a guy to do that. But back then, and he's supposed to be the man who's leading, like, the whole carnival. So he's not going to admit anything. And then you've got people saying to Samson, what's going on? Well, he's not going to tell, you know, he talks about management, but he's not going to say management is a magical guy in a box.
Fair
point. So it's things like that. So people don't explain it because it's not going to work. Not just plot-wise, but to me, the show isn't so much about the plot and the narrative. It was, for me, individual character pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Ben is an interesting character. Samson's an interesting character. Like, all of them from top to bottom. And they just so happen to all be around each other.
Yeah. All right. Fair point on that. It was just – it's something that just jumped out to me immediately that – so much of the drama could be dropped if you just went, all right, I'm going to trust you. Because I'm in a carnival full of people that can do odd things.
Yeah.
So I'm no stranger than anybody else, other than the fact that he would be worried about them exploiting him, maybe. And it's not just with Ben. Like you said, it would seem to be with everybody. And it was just, I wish people would just have opened up a little bit.
Yeah. It would have solved a lot of problems.
It would have solved a little problem. But then you wouldn't have got 12 episodes out of it. But then I do feel like that because they didn't do that, we went whole 12 episodes for about six episodes of story.
Yeah. And that's probably where season two fixes things. They were aware of that long, drawn-out kind of feeling. So they really pick it up, and they start getting into people are being more honest with each other. And there's even in that, I think, first or second episode of season two where Samson says to Ben, all right, from here on out.
Yeah, I think it's the first episode, right?
And they take that to heart. It's not just a line that they throw in there. They start – it's hard for them. You can see that, but they actually start doing it.
I think now that we sit here and talk, the relationship that really picked at me with this was Lodes kept going to Ben and saying, I want to help you.
Right.
Tell me what you, because he knew or had an idea of what Ben was capable of. He wanted to help him. He had information and Ben wouldn't talk to him.
Exactly.
But Ben was spending all the other time that he wasn't talking to Lodes trying to get that information and trying to learn about his abilities and trying to find out about his father and his mother. And then the person that a person that comes to him and says, I have the information. He's like, don't talk to me. Go away. I'm like, wait a minute.
And I pit that to Ben's whole life has been about keeping people at an arm's length. And you can kind of see he's got like mommy issues. Yeah. So the person that he really confides in is this older woman.
True. Oh, yeah. True.
So, again, that goes back to the whole character pieces. He's not going to talk to this guy who's kind of more of a father figure because he's got daddy issues, too, of his dad abandoned him. And, you know, he's been told to, like, be afraid of who he is. So you've got this guy saying, I can help you. I know what's really going on with you. And he's like, no, I'm going to ignore what's going on with me because I was told it was evil. Since I was a little boy, I was told the devil's in me. And then he's got this kinder older woman who's just like, you're a beautiful boy. You're not doing, you know, you're okay. You're safe with me. That's who he gravitates towards. He does want answers, but he wants to figure them out himself.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, on his own terms.
Right. He's afraid of being exploited because he's been told his whole life that you're evil.
Yep, fair enough.
Were you more interested in kind of like the clear main story of things going on with Ben and things going on with Justin, or were you more interested in kind of everything else kind of going around the carnival? because there were so many little sub stories that, again, go back to that character stuff that don't actually play into the overall narrative, but they play into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So what pulled you in more?
I actually found the peripherals a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Mainly because the main story, the A story, if you want to call it that, often took the B story line. I mean, it was the main point of the story was the part that was always drawn out. And all the peripheral stories actually kind of seemed like they clicked along a little faster. Actually, the people I found myself most interested in, because it was just this bizarre dynamic amongst them, was what's their last name? Stumpy's family.
Yeah.
The dancers, uh-huh. and the dancers and the prostitutes, and it's his wife and it's his daughters, and they do the nude dance and they prostitute themselves out, and it's this bizarre dysfunctional family dynamic, and I found it so incredibly interesting to watching these people figure this themselves out.
And they did a lot of research with traveling carnivals at the times and freak shows, and that was a very common thing.
Really?
This was not something that they just, that's grotesque, let's throw it in. Like, that was pretty standard run of the mill. Like, these were all family operations, and mm-hmm. it was, this is how we're making our money. Like, but that's your wife. This is how we make our money. Yeah. No, like, there's no other way to make money. We're going to starve. So this is what we have to do. And we're okay with it.
They had this line where this is family and we love each other. This is just tricks. This is just business. And I thought that was just, it was so bizarre. And the fact that the father is effectively, you know, tarting out his daughters mm-hmm. and doing the big shows and all the, you know, don't take your panties off until the end and we'll get more. Yeah. What?
When you consider it's the Depression, it's the Dust Bowl,
true.
We're moving town to town, you know, and then you see, like, you know, they're going, you know, every time I always thought, like, breakfast was an always interesting time because breakfast always kind of told you how well the carnival was doing.
Mm.
And I can't remember what episode it was.
Eating. Did they have eggs or are they just cruel?
Right. And there's an episode, I can't remember when it is, if it's first season or second season, but there's an episode where Samson comes out and goes, we've got eggs, we've got bacon, we've got orange, and they're all so happy.
Uh-huh.
When this is something that any of us can just have every morning, but we don't.
Right.
We'll take a power bar and get in the car and go to work, but for them, this was just the height of luxury that day,
mm-hmm.
and that told you they had a good week.
Yep. No, I really enjoyed them. And everything that kind of connected to them, which would include Jonesy, the lead.
He was head of the carnies.
Yeah, head of the guys that set up and take down, yeah. And then Sophie ties in because the one daughter befriends Sophie. And
Lila?
Lila, thank you. Yeah. And all of that, then, of course, that branches off into Sophie and her relationship with her mom, which was bizarre in its own right. Jonesy's relationship with everybody. It all ties together and it all seems to kind of focus and kind of revolve around this weird family.
Right. Yeah, it really does. And I really like that family. And you see how, you know, when one of them dies, how that shakes the entire carnival.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And you know, everything has to change and they're not sure what to do and they just sort of like trudge forward. But you see how they're all still grieving. They're having their shows and then they're grieving
mm-hmm.
and then they move on and they're grieving. And it's just, it was very human to me, that side of it. And I was definitely more interested in what was going on in the carnival more. And especially as the show progresses, you see, because Ben just sort of is plopped in quite literally into this carnival and his bizarre life is forced upon all of these people and then their life is forced upon him. So there isn't that good gelling right away. And he's not sure where he belongs and if he even wants to be there, because he says all the time, I didn't ask you to pick me up and take me with you. Well, you were going to get arrested. I didn't ask for that. Like, they were going to run you over in your house. I didn't ask for you to stop that. So he's resisting it. They're kind of resisting him. And as it progresses, you see the life of the carnival influences his life, and he starts to feel like, these are my people. And they start to take him in and say, he's one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So when he really gets in trouble later into season two, they're just like, pick the carnival up. We're going that way. Why? Because Ben's that way, and we have to protect him.
Because he's one of our own.
Yes.
No one gets left behind.
Exactly. And,
Toby Hughes is the guy that played the father of the family, Stumpy Dreyfuss, was
Bo
Dreyfuss.
He's such a good actor.
He maybe, yeah, maybe the best out of the entire cast.
Yeah.
I just loved watching him. The way he acted was just, everything was so natural. You really get the impression, this is this guy. They just gave him the clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I've seen him in a lot of other things, and he's such a good character actor, and I was so glad that they cast him. And it's one of those things that now, anytime I see him pop up, I refer to him as Stumpy. Like, oh, who was that guy? That's Stumpy. They're like, what? Who's that? I watch the show.
He's just, there's some lines that just come off of his tongue so natural, yeah. And it just, it seems like that wasn't written. That was just, they were like, he got beat up in a bar. And the next morning, he's like, well, you don't make friends well. Not my strong point. And just the way he says it, it's just, for some reason, that just stuck out, jumped out at me and went, that is just the most natural. And he's just completely honest with himself,
yes.
Too. It's just amazing.
He's the only honest person in the entire carnival.
Yeah.
He doesn't lie about anything. And you can see that all of the problems really weigh on him, because he's just sort of like, why is this difficult for you all? Why can't you just be more like me? And, you know, whenever there's a problem and, you know, people are keeping things from him, he goes and he has one too many. And that's kind of his vice. And
yeah.
But the other thing is, I think that really helps him as an actor was just his voice.
Mm-hmm.
His voice was perfect for that
role.
It's
very unique. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was perfect to be the carnival barker and just to be like, come on up and see the man-eating chicken. And then he cons them and he goes, you know, maybe you go tell your friends. They drop a nickel too to see the man eating chicken. And everyone's like, yeah. He sells that whole scene. Mm-hmm. It's a joke. It's a gag. It's not that funny, but he makes it so good as an actor.
Yes. That is something that, despite whether any issues I had with the actual story itself, is the cast that was involved. They're really, I can't think of anyone that stood out as being, boy, they could have done better.
Right.
The cast is just amazing.
Top to bottom. It's a great cast. And then we didn't even speak on the other side of the show,
mm-hmm.
which is everything going on with Brother Justin.
Yeah.
And Clancy Brown, who is as great an actor as they come, who has been in some of the best roles ever. To me, this is the best acting still to this day that I've ever seen him do.
I have to admit, I haven't seen him do much. I'm most familiar with him as the voice of Lex Luthor from the animated Superman.
Which he's great in that, too.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So I haven't seen him in a lot of films, or I didn't. I would think if I saw him, I would have picked up on him, because he is, I mean, when he's on the screen and when he talks,
yeah,
all
voice.
Attention.
Yeah. I think that was why he was well cast as Lex Luthor. I mean, that voice is, it's not booming voice of God kind of voice, but it's everybody shut up and listen kind of voice.
Yes, absolutely.
And he was great for that. And you can totally see him as a priest, because he speaks, everybody in the church is going to listen.
Yeah, he's got the voice where, and like you said, perfect for a preacher, because if he is consoling you or telling you that everything's going to be all right, you absolutely believe him.
Yep.
If he changes the level of his voice just a notch and tells you that you're going to be damned unless you repent, you believe him.
You believe him.
It's just it is the perfect voice, and he is just a phenomenal actor.
And I wonder if I've never thought of this before, but I wonder if the voice is the thing that they were really looking for when they were casting, just not just for that, but for any of them. Because a lot of the tones and the sounds and the cadence that a lot of these actors brought were perfect for those roles. Even like Jonesy's voice was great, and Sophie's voice, and the little things that were in Ben's voice were all so ideal for those characters. Samson, even though he's running the carnival, but he's a dwarf, the sound of his voice made you go, I'm listening to him.
Yeah.
Before the beginning, after the great war between heaven and hell, God created the earth and gave dominion over it to the crafty ape he called man. And to each generation was born a creature of light and a creature of darkness. And great armies would clash by night in the ancient war between good and evil. There was magic then, nobility, and unimaginable cruelty. so it was. Until the day that a false sun exploded over Trinity. And man forever traded away wonder for reason.
But he sells every one of them. Sell every bit of it.
Yeah.
You don't get the impression. You feel like somehow you're watching a carnival in 1932 or 1934, whenever this was. I think it was 32. It was supposed to be when it was taking place.
I believe somewhere around there.
Right, it was time. You really feel like you're eavesdropping in on this because everyone sells it.
Absolutely.
And it's strange. The whole cast, every time I see someone and every time, you know, sometimes I throw out a certain line, I go, I've seen them in stuff before. And then I look in their filmography and I'm like, I don't recognize anything. But there are all these people that I felt like I'd seen them before. But then, no, I don't. They all, like, maybe remind me of somebody else, but I can't figure out who. Or maybe I saw them and didn't realize it was them or something.
Or they were a lot younger.
Maybe that was it. But I just go through their filmography, and I'm like, well, I don't remember seeing that, but damn it, that person seems familiar to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the most recognizable person was Clancy Brown.
Sure.
For when the show started, and kind of, I think he's had by far the most successful career after.
Mm-hmm.
But even that being said, it's just one of those things that, yeah, just like you said, you feel like you've kind of time traveled and they plucked these people out. And I don't know who the casting director was, but I think that's probably one of the greatest efforts of a casting director of all time.
Yeah. I've also was surprised how little really revolved around the nights. You don't see much of the carnival during carnival time. During the night when they're actually running the carnival. It is all about the day-to-day behind the scenes in the morning and after the thing is shut down. That kind of surprised me. I thought we'd see a little bit more, I guess, exploitation kind of comes to mind, that you'd have like this sort of more focus on the freak show aspect.
Sure.
More like American Horror Story or something like that. Yeah, you cringe on that one.
Well, yeah.
Well, you understand where I think where American Horror Story maybe picked up some cues from something like Carnival, but then took it to that nth degree.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's what they were trying to avoid. I think that was by design. They do sprinkle in a few things. Like, again, I can't remember. I meant to go back and rewatch a lot of episodes, but I was busy trying to keep up with everything on CW with the DC shows because I was really geeked up for Crossover, which was just this week. And so I couldn't miss that. But there was the episode where everybody's like kind of like walking into the carnival and Samson's doing the chalk on their back. He's like, oh, that guy's got a big wallet. And then they pickpocket him. So they sprinkle it in a little bit here and there. They do the episode where they're like, oh, we're not a carnival anymore. We're a traveling mission and Benjamin St. John and all
anything
of that.
Anything to make money.
Right. And what I thought was funny is they already had the poster. Like, they've done this before. This is nothing
gonna
new.
Gonna touch it up.
Right, exactly. They didn't have to start from scratch, and you just sort of see how long they've been at this and how normal it is for everybody. Like, we're gonna do a religious show, and we're gonna shake them down for that.
That I think that is something that I appreciated, is that it wasn't just this constant, let's show you how we do this, and it was just... This just – it kept going on, and you picked up on it or you didn't.
Right.
Like, you know, him chalking the – nothing's really done about it. You don't – they don't explain it. No one says, why'd you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You don't see anything going on after that. He's just – he's a mark.
Right.
Literally, that's where it comes from. He's a mark.
Exactly.
They know that this guy's got a wallet. Fleece him for all he's worth.
Uh-huh.
You know, get him to play the game again their time because he's got a fat wallet. Yeah, I don't even know if they'll pickpocket him. They just want to make sure that they keep him in there
right.
as long as they
No, they
can.
Do pickpocket him.
Do they?
Yeah, I think as the guy's getting on the Ferris wheel, the guy leans forward and goes, hold on, I want to make sure you're strapped in. He gets the whole wallet.
Oh, all right.
So I just really love that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they sneak it in. And I guess you don't see too much of the night show because how long before that becomes repetitive?
Exactly, yeah.
And they really wanted to keep that narrative going. But to go back to the A story, what did you think, at least in terms of the first season of that, of like of everything that's going on with Ben, everything that's going on with Justin, and you know these two guys are connected. They've, you know, there's that shared dream that they keep having in the diner, and then you have the image of the soldier and the guy in the nice uniform.
In the bear.
In the bear. And these things keep popping up. What did you think of that?
It surprised me that it didn't go a little faster. The paths didn't cross sooner. I was really surprised that by the end of the first season, these two still have not crossed each other's paths. The carnival's still in Texas, and Justin is still in California. That surprised me. Like I said, I think that storyline was the one that was drawn out the most, to the point of where you found yourself not as, at least myself, not as interested in it, because everything else was just clicking along with the carnival, and the Justin thing just almost kind of kept breaking it up. Stuff would be going on in the carnival, and then suddenly, oh, and this Justin and his new mission. It's like, oh, well, I wanted to go back and see what Stumpy and the gang were doing. And so it actually found it a little distracting for me from what I actually found interesting.
That's funny. I think it's funny only because as someone who watched it when it came out, that was like the draw for all of the fans, is trying to figure out what all of those like scenes meant and the mm-hmm. dreams meant and the imagery meant. And as you said, it was a little bit ahead of its time. Yes and no, because it's 2003. It's HBO. They were able to get away with more. That's right when like the home DVR was really getting into the mainstream and lots of people were having it. So they make this show with all of these like kind of subliminal scenes and quick flashes of images, and they think they're being really clever that, you know, we're going to flash an image and you're going to kind of go like,
what was that?
Yeah, what did I see? And then all of a sudden, they didn't think of it. People could
back up,
slow it down, freeze frame it.
Digitally, not on a scratchy VHS tape.
And screenshot it.
Mm.
And I was really heavily involved with like the imagery and trying to figure out what was really going on, because it's all of this like stuff pulled from the Bible and from just Old Testament, and trying to figure out what it was. So I was heavy involved with online forums, and you had people posting those scenes that went by in half a second. You saw the whole thing now.
Oh, nice.
And you could break it down. And this is now normal today,
yeah, well, yeah,
for a
absolutely.
TV show of people just screen capping things and being like, here's everything you may have missed.
Here's the Easter eggs that you missed. Yeah.
Right. 2003, that was just starting. And so it created this whole subculture at the time of people sharing screen caps that they got, and then people running back and being like, okay, you see that mark on his back? Well, if you go into the Bible, it talks about that mark. Or if you go back to this old movie, it talks about this mark. And people being like, so that's what it really means. And then the next episode comes up and the next set of images pop up, and there was that whole other thing to dissect. And because it was a show that came out every week mm-hmm. for 12 straight weeks, it just kind of kept feeding the online monster.
Nice.
At a time when that wasn't the norm. Today, that's the norm. We do that for every show now. But I just remember being so pulled in. And this was the first show, really, for me, that I watched as it aired. Everything else I caught in syndication, or I binged on DVD, which we had talked about.
Right.
But this was the first one that I was like, I am sitting down and watching this week after week after week. But I don't want to wait. So I'm going to go online and discuss it. And just it was everywhere. If you pulled up a Carnival forum, it was just screen cap after screen cap of those scenes that just shot right by. And it was great to see that people could
Very
do that.
Interesting. Yeah, that would have been really interesting to get involved in. And I could definitely see where this is a show where you would want to sit down and talk with people and break it down. That is definitely a draw that me sitting here kind of binge watching it and everything, I can't do it.
Right.
Yeah. And that is a good point. That would, I think, enhance my enjoyment of the show if I could sit there week after week and then go making sure I'd seen the episode and then go into the forums
mm-hmm.
and the message boards and went, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also one of those shows that kind of benefits from a second look.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like if once you finish the two seasons that it is, and then you go back, you'll notice something that you completely missed, because now you know what it means.
Yeah, okay, sure.
And it may, you see the nuance and you're just like, this makes so much more. How did I miss that? Oh, because I had no idea where they were going with this. And so in that regard, it was ahead of its time, and it probably suffered as a result. I feel like if this was a show that came out 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been canceled.
No. I think as far as that goes, I think it is ahead of its time. I think something like this would be really would have struck a chord in today's audiences, because that's what it's all about now.
Yeah.
Social media.
Mm-hmm.
And my gosh, it would be blowing up. Every episode would be on Facebook the next day. It would be like, I didn't watch it, so now I can't get online.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was one of the things, like, that's kind of what helped the show keep going for its second year, because I remember when the first season was in 2003. The second season was 2005. They took a while to film those episodes, and people weren't sure if it was coming back at the time. I can't remember how long it was announced, but I just remember that when it was, I was like, oh, good. I don't want that to end.
And I have time to watch it again.
Right. And I did. Yeah, I think I watched the first season at least twice before the second season came out. But yeah, it was that online presence that really helped it keep going. And then when it got canceled, like, Clancy Brown was really involved with social media when it was coming out. And I remember when it got canceled, people really ran to him, because he was very involved with communicating with the fans. He was very humbled by it and the response. So he said, you know, because people were like, can we get it to come back? Can we force the network to bring it back? And he goes, we can. You just got to spread the word. And mm-hmm. So people started to, and then the air kind of came out of the balloon. But yeah. It was one of those things that, like, 3, 4, even 5 years later, people were like, can we bring it back? Can we bring it back? And then after that, it was like too much time has gone by.
Sure.
But even then, like, I've seen him, like, kind of do interviews where he's like, that was a great experience. He's like, I've never been part of something like that where the fans were just totally rabid and just loved it. And were all, he goes, I loved interacting with them. And that is, I think if you were in, it's a hard show to watch now, especially episode after
right.
the other. But at the time, it was something that hadn't happened before.
Yeah, I think it's a show, I'm thinking, watching it and now discussing it, it is a kind of show where you need that time to sort of dwell on it.
Yeah.
You watch an episode and you need to be less focused about, okay, what happens next, and more focused on what just happened.
Yeah, it's a show that you really need to process. I tell people all the time that if you're going to watch it, take it an episode at a time, even though it's hard to do now, or tell a person
sure.
to do. And that I say, and you're probably not going to like it. Just because it's, I feel it was ahead of its time, and yet it's already a little dated in some regards.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as saying that I didn't like what I watched. And I'll probably go ahead and finish. I mean, it's only got, 10 more episodes or something to finish the second season. So I'll probably go ahead and finish the second season when I've got a chance, just to see where it goes. Because now where the first season, there was a lot of, is this supernatural or is this everyone's imagination?
Yeah.
And it finally it depends on which one you're kind of, which storyline you're kind of following. If, at some point or another, they finally say, yes, there's something magical going on
mm-hmm.
here. It really seems like by the time you get the second season, it is all, you know, gloves are off and
yeah,
it's magic.
Yeah. And I wonder if, because they kind of had that time to stop and reflect, because it was one of those shows that, you know, we had talked about when we were talking about TV, it was one of those shows that benefited from, well, we wrote them, we made them, deal with it. Like
right.
we can't keep up with what the audience thinks and adjust along as we go. But we can season to season, so
right.
we saw everything. Because if you look at, like, the ratings of the episodes online, season 2 is rated higher than season 1.
Hmm.
Even though, me personally, I kind of gravitate towards season 1 more because of that whole introduction of the characters and learning what this environment is. I like character. And in season 2, you know all of it, so they really kind of steamroll the story forward.
I liked... one of the things I did like from season 1 is the fact that there is a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You had to sit there and you're trying to figure out what is going on. And even though I'm only like a couple episodes into season 2, the mystery seems to be kind of gone. And now you're just wasting time until, okay, we told you what's going to happen, and now we just have to get there.
Yeah.
And that, to me, sort of like, oh, well, I kind of... I enjoyed the build-up. I just wanted, I guess, a little bit more substance to some of the...
A bit more compact.
A little more compact, yeah. But I liked that there was mystery. I liked that I was sitting there thinking, okay, how are these two tied together? What's the connection? Where's the threads that are going to pull them together? I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And now by the end of the first season and then going into the second season, it's like, well, now all that's gone. Management is less of isn't a mystery. In fact, the beginning of second season, oh, you're this guy? And yes, my name is this. I came from here. Like, right. Well, what the heck was that?
Right, exactly. And I think that was people saying about season one, a little too slow, get us there quicker. And so right off the bat, we're going to tell you who this is.
Yeah. And it takes some of the mystery away from it, even though this is still, how can this person even be? And how does it do what he does? It still takes some of the mystery away for it.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a disappointment for me going into the second season.
The other thing is the nature of Ben's powers, or rather like what they are. Like, mm-hmm. To me, that was a huge draw because I remember seeing the promo before the show started, and it was the idea. They promoted it as, you know, for every life you save, you have to take a life. For everyone you heal, you hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing that, and like because the end of the first episode with the girl who can't walk,
right?
And he heals her legs, and the crops die. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, he just screwed that family over.
Oh yeah,
like yeah, that girl can walk now. She can't eat. So what was good of that? So right. What was your take on that? Because that was the thing that pulled me to. I gotta watch that. That sounds like a problem.
I love that aspect in the beginning. Yeah, when the first time you don't know what's happening. He obviously there's something different about him. You don't really know what it is. Did they show the flashback with the kitten before he heals the girl? I think he must have. I think
probably
they must have, where they show a flashback of him healing a kitten that's been 3 days dead.
Yeah,
and it comes back to life, and mom drowns it in a bag because that's that's the evil. Lord's work. That's mm-hmm. evil. So yeah, he heals this girl who's crippled, probably a polio or something, and so now she can walk again. And then all around her, the crops in this family are just turning brown. And then later on, you see him heal someone's broken arm, but he takes him far out and into a pond, and he heals a broken arm, and all the fish
float.
And I like the idea. I love that idea of, yes, you can fix this, but something else is going to break. And then it's explained by somebody else. He comes across this woman that's got some answers, and she explains to him that to heal, to give life, life has to be taken. But I did not take that as you have to kill somebody in order to save somebody's life. That it was just, I like the idea that it could be just random. And the way this woman explained it, it sounded random. It could be me. It could be this person. It could be that nice girl that you came here with. I like the idea that it's just random. And then by the end of the season, though, they pretty much spelled it out that, no, you have to kill somebody in order to save somebody's life.
Right.
I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of, I'd rather like the randomness aspect of it. I love that give and take, the yin and yang of that ability, but I like it better to be just, the chance has got to be, okay, yeah, I can heal you, but someone's going to die. I don't know where, I don't know if it's going to be anyone we know, someone's going to die. That I really like, because I think that provides a lot more, makes it harder for people to make the decision to use it or not. Whereas when the end, like, oh, you have to make a choice of who's going to die, and, well, oh, okay, this person did something horrible, so that makes the choice easy. Like, oh, well, that kind of took it away from me.
Yeah, and that's what makes Ben my favorite character. He constantly struggles with that of... Because I looked at the beginning of the show, he knows he has this ability, and he has very little control over it. He just knows it kind of works through proximity. So he heals the girl knowing the nearest bit of life are these crops. That's what's going to go. So he heals her, then the crops die, because it's the only green anything for miles. And then he knows, I got to take this guy, I got to take Samson, can't remember his name. I got to take him out away from everyone else because I don't want to hurt anyone else. He's like, all right, we're far enough. And he's aware there's plenty of fish out here that are going to die as I heal his arm. But then he's, and that woman says, makes it seem like it's random. And the guy saying, you know, heal my mom. And he looks into the audience and his thought is, I'm about to end somebody's life here. And I don't know who it's going to be. And I can't control it. And then as he talks with management at the end, management says, well, you can. You can pick. And then he realizes he has total control over life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And he moves life from one to the other because there's that scene where he's fighting Lodes and he chokes Lodes. And I can't remember her name.
Ruthie.
The season, it's cutting to black. The season's about to end. And then it cuts to her waking up.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't put his hands on her.
No.
He did that from across the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
He has total control at this point. It's like Magneto figuring out how strong he is.
I liked his argument with management. When management was explaining what it is, he's like, no, that's God's business. Only God can do that. And management says, then why do you have this power?
Yes, it's a great argument. And then even Ben is just sort of like, huh, I can do it.
Uh-huh.
And to me, is like, you know, I already just referenced it as a big comic book fan. I see all of these parallels to like the struggle of a superhero that I kind of see his struggle kind of reminds me a little bit of like Clark Kent's of like, you know, I can do all of this, but should I? I can, mm-hmm. you know, I can make these choices. Should I, or should I just let it go? But then his emotions get the better of him because he's still very human.
I feel like we talked a lot about Clancy Brown, and we've given his side of the story a little bit of a short shrift here. We keep going back, and it's my fault. I keep going back to the carnival because that's where I had the most fun. But yeah, his story, I think, is just as interesting. And I almost think, man, I wish that was one series.
Yeah,
the carnival was another.
It could have, and then the crossover,
then they merge or something. But his story of he's a preacher. He and as a sister or backbones of this ministry, and we find out about them, and you see this through his eyes. You see this sort of it turns out to be kind of a vision of these two young children that are the only survivors of a train wreck or something like that, that were immigrants, and then someone dies and you find, oh no, him and his sister were the two kids, and they ended up actually having to, they were taken in by a preacher, which was great to see Ralph Waite, who I grew up watching him on The Waltons.
Okay.
So it was great to see him in a series and not just, popping up every once in a while in some show somewhere. It was great to see him. It was kind of like a semi-regular. Who played their preacher friend, the higher up preacher,
yeah.
The one that took him in and adopted him.
I'm trying to remember his name.
I have
Norman.
Norman, yeah. It was great to see him again. And so you see a little bit of this nonlinear story kind of piecing together.
Right.
And then you realize that apparently even from the beginning, there was something not quite right about Justin.
Right.
He even at one point calls he's missing, and he calls his sister out of the blue, and you've always known what was inside me, and then hangs up.
Yeah.
And then you see this weird balance where you suddenly start wondering, wait, who's really in control? Is it the sister? Is it Justin? And is now Justin somehow found something within himself that is now usurping that control?
Yeah.
And I don't think that was quite done as evenly as it could have been. I think it sort of bounced around where it's like, oh no, she's in charge and she's really the power, but then she all of a sudden she's very demure and she's cowering beneath Justin. I'm like, wait a minute, so maybe not.
Right. I chalk that up to, especially when you compare it to Ben's story, because it's you eventually find out that this is about, it's the last battle between the forces of good and the forces of evil in their purest forms, because that's what it is. One of them is good and one of them is evil down to their core, but they still have free will, and it's about embracing what's in you. And so Ben is this story of a guy discovering he is a force of good, and he questions that, should I do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, you have Justin is the force of evil, and he's also questioning, should I do this? And so Ben has had his mom keep him down, and Justin has had his sister keep him down. And as they both realize what's in them and what they're capable of doing, you see how they each kind of rise up very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Ben rises up in a humble sort of way and gives into his emotions. Justin rises up in that I'm taking charge now of both my own home and my life and my destiny and what I'm meant to be. And I like that difference, but it's how they're they're on the parallel and then they diverge eventually, especially as season two progresses.
All right. Yeah, I definitely probably going to get into that a little bit more. I got the feeling that obviously by the end of the first season and going into the second season, that Justin's story really starts kind of taking a stronger presence.
Mm-hmm.
Was the impression I got. And I'll keep watching to see if that's true enough. Because, I mean, yeah, he sort of embraces whatever it is that's inside him. He realizes that, you know, that there isn't a demon among us. I think he says at one point, I am the demon.
Yeah.
I like the idea of someone that has spent their entire life, you know, trying to do good and be this wonderful person and everything. And that is the person that has the most evil inside them. There's something about that that just, and you can't help but wonder, is there any message in there? Did someone have an issue with religion one way or the other? And
I think it the message is more of like a nature versus nurture kind of thing.
Sure.
That you can be raised a certain way, but at the end of the day, it rests with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you see Justin, he did a lot of good. He helped a lot of people. And through flashback, you realize he also did a lot of bad, but I think he did more good than bad. And as he came to terms, because it's kind of this whole, like, in a way, it's a coming of age story, figuring out who you are. And the choice lies with you, but this is still what you are. And so give into it or don't. And Justin gives into it.
He embraces it. Right.
But he still chooses that. It's not like this evil presence takes him over. He is the evil presence. And so he decides, I'm going to take over everything. I'm going to just embrace what this is.
Well, I think it's interesting that he continues to fight it until he feels like he has nothing to fight for, and that was brought on by actions of his sister.
Yeah.
They start the ministry in the downtown in the old brothel, and that burns down, and, you know, children's lives are lost, and they don't know. You all think it's it was the town council or someone in town that did it, and, you know, spoilers for this 13-year-old show that you may or may not have watched. And, you know, we discover that that's not the case. And so it's actions from his sister that kind of drive him away. And then while he's, you know, wandering the road feeling lost, that's when he kind of comes to this realization and starts embracing this darkness that's inside him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was really wondering, like, wow, so who's really pulling the strings here, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of – to me, their dynamic is like – it's like the snake eating its own tail. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how you're getting it, you know, it's just constantly going in a circle of like, they keep pushing each other. And because her plan wasn't for him, she didn't know that he had this power inside him. She just thought he could be so much more than just, you know, preaching to a small town. She goes, you could be preaching to everyone. So she burns down the building and the children die, and that her plan was for them to die to kind of get a lot of press and get more money and to get bigger, because she's like, you were thinking too small. And then he's thinking, and he's like, well, you're thinking even smaller because it's escalated so much more.
I like watching their relationship and watching just their characters, because you're constantly thinking you've got them pegged. You know who these people are. He's this preacher, but you know, you can tell he's conflicted inside, and there's one moment very early on where he's walking past the hallway and he hears something in the bathroom. He looks in and he sees his sister, you know, getting out of the shower, getting out of the bathtub, and you start thinking, oh, he's got a little weird ancestral lusty thing going for his sister. And so you think you got him pegged, and you think his sister is just this completely pure and you get the feeling that she kind of eggs a little bit of that on.
Right.
And then it's like, wow, okay, who the hell are these people?
Right. Who's the worst person?
Yeah. But you really think you got these characters kind of laid out. And boy, almost every episode you're like, nope, guess not.
Now imagine waiting a week and your only place of an outlet is the internet.
No kidding.
That's why I still love the show. Did you have an episode that really jumped out, an individual episode, like a favorite, or even not necessarily an episode as a whole, but maybe just like one arc that was in an episode? Because I know what mine is.
Babylon, I thought.
Okay.
When they visited Babylon, I thought was the one that was kind of some of the freakiest goings on.
Just a road to Babylon?
Yeah, just ahead.
We've been waiting for you folks a long time.
I think I got something figured out.
I'm all ears.
How's a person know if she's pregnant?
Can't handle your liquor, huh?
You're gonna go to hell.
Where do you think we are, farm boy?
Fellas ain't happy, Samson.
You gotta give me something to tell her. Damn it!
Help me!
Did you ever know a man named Scudder?
Yeah, I know a fella named Scudder. Why?
I know who you are!
He's going to town tonight, blow off a little steam.
We got a straw house in there tonight, Samson.
No blow off. That's an order.
We've worked way tougher crowds than this.
We gave you our tickets.
No, you didn't.
Calling me a liar.
That's enough already!
All hell's gonna break loose.
Where they set up in what appears to be just there's nobody around, and they set up, and then out of nowhere, suddenly just hundreds of these men, obviously they look like they've been their workers or miners, show up, and it's just men. No families, no women, just men. And they go through the carnival, and they do the rides and everything, and then they disappear. And that's also the one where one of the daughters, one of Stumpy's daughters, ends up dead.
Yep.
And there's only seems to be like one person in the entire town, the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very – I guess it was probably two episodes where they were in Babylon maybe.
Yes, there's Babylon, and then there's like the aftermath episode of dealing with – pick a number.
Yeah. Pick a number. Those, I think, kind of stood out as just being where you just rapt attention because of how it was done, what was going on. And, those were the two that really kind of jumped out.
Babylon is that episode that way back when I was watching it, that was the one where I told people, like, all right, watch first episode, and if you like it, watch up to Babylon. And if Babylon doesn't make you want to know more, well, then stop. But everyone who's gotten up to Babylon has been like, what the hell is this about?
Yeah.
And they keep going. But, yeah, because it's the creepiest episode with that whole town sequence. And mm-hmm. the bartender clears it up and blurs it for you more at the same time. It's like, where is everyone? Well, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anyone. They're always here.
Like,
what are you getting at?
Yep.
You know, it's like, didn't you try to leave? I always try to leave. I never get far.
Never get far.
Like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kind of took on that the bartender from The Shining a little bit of like, you're not making this easier, but I'm interested in what you're saying.
I honestly, with the way he was talking, and once they got there, I almost... There was a part of me that thought, oh, my God, the rest of the series is going to be them stuck in Babylon. You know, they won't be able to leave, and they got to figure out what the hell's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and the show in season two will return to Babylon.
Oh, interesting.
The carnival doesn't, but the show itself does, and you do get a clearer answer of what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Who did it? And, well,
yeah, because there was the whole storyline about the Scudder was
Scudder.
In there and killed some guy in the mine. And,
right.
Yeah.
And then the mine was caved in and everyone died. You figure out how that happened and why that happened. And they don't specifically say what came as a result of it, but there's the fan theory that I subscribe to that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. We'll come back to that after I watch.
Sure.
sounds pretty spoilery for someone.
So I'll leave it at that. But the episode that I really liked was Black Blizzard, where everyone kind of got stuck somewhere.
Y'all know where that road leads to?
Babylon.
Babylon don't even exist.
I have something to show you.
Show it to me, then.
It isn't in my possession. You'll have to drive us there.
Now, either you turn this chapel over to someone else, or you'll be reassigned.
I can't just stop.
God spoke to me as he speaks to all of us.
As he spoke to Abraham.
So you married?
No, never found the right girl.
Oh, hell.
And the others, pack it up.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph!
I almost got dead out there!
I gave up my eyes for a fraction of what you possess.
I don't want it.
Don't be absurd.
I don't have to use it.
They must open their eyes! They must open their mouths and drown!
Particularly as Ben and Lodes were stuck in the cabin,
mm-hmm.
and you saw that the height, well, maybe not the height, but just the extent of Ben's powers isn't just healing people. He can stop the weather. He can do whatever he wants. It's not just, I can fix your arm, I can fix your leg. Like, no, I can control the world if I needed to.
I really liked Lodes
as
a character, too, in that episode and just in general. I liked the fact there was times where you're thinking, you know, I know he's blind, but I have a feeling he sees more than you think.
Yeah, definitely. that I don't think he needs anyone to walk him anywhere. I don't think he mm-hmm. needs his cane. I think it's just, it's the act of let them see a weak old man and they'll tell me whatever I need to know. And that just adds to, like, knowledge is power and it adds to it. And I think it's that episode where he says something like, I wished for a fraction of your power and I got it and it cost me my eyes.
Yeah, I gave up my eyes for a fraction of what you have.
Yeah. And you can see that. On one hand, he kind of does want to help Ben, but on the other hand, he wants to use Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben is a really good judge of character, and he gets that.
Yeah.
And that's why he keeps Lodes at a distance.
That could be. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, that was a good one. I liked that was almost, other than Ben and Lodes, that was almost sort of the almost lighthearted episode, really.
Yeah.
Because you had Samson stuck in the house of his prostitute friend that he stops by whenever they're in town. It had this fun thing with him and then the guy that drove him who's also stuck there.
I got two bits.
I like there's that. They're all three sitting there, maybe drinking something, you know, whatever. You could see there's like this real uncomfortableness about it. Finally, the guy's like, I got $2.
Right.
And it seems like $2. And the girl's like, yeah, all right. What?
Right. She's like, I'm not going anywhere. It's $2 more than I had.
Yeah. You wonder, how much did Samson pay?
Right. And then they come back down, and the teacup is broken.
Yeah,
she's like, what?
Wind.
Wind. Like, that part is so funny to me. Yeah, it's their version of a comedy episode.
Uh-huh.
But then even you have Sophie's side of it, where she goes to the diner.
Oh,
and she sees the guy, and she kind of makes this plan of, I'm going to seduce him for no reason. She just picks him out.
Right.
And so that's kind of that first episode where you're just sort of like, what's wrong with Sophie?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on? And that's where they kind of get the ball rolling on her side of it. And I really liked her story, too, of her relationship with her mom, who is comatose, but she can hear even across the carnival, that she has to drive far away to not hear her.
Mm-hmm.
And then just how season one ends with the two of them trapped in the trailer as it's burning. And then you can see the mom's trying to kill Sophie. And you're just sort of like, why is the mom trying to kill Sophie?
And you don't, don't spoil it if it's going to happen, but you don't get any explanation as to why Mom tries to take Sophie's life. It doesn't come out, at least in the next episode or the episodes after. And that was a little annoying. And you can tell there's magic involved because she's trapped in a bus that's engulfed in flames. Jonesy goes after her in a bus engulfed in flames, and they both come out without a mark on them.
Right. And it makes you wonder what's going on. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
They're just, they just have a little bit of, like, ash on their face, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a little bit of a hint as to what's going on with Sophie and her mom, is like, because there's the part where Sophie was convinced that her mom was losing her mind because her mom was letting in images of like her
stuff that she wouldn't show her before.
Right. And you find out like Sophie's mom was raped and what's going on. And then you start to wonder, like, is that where Sophie came from? Does she resent her for that? That she is the product of her being a rape victim. And so it's just sort of like, I can see why she hates her child.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then you realize something's a little off with Sophie in terms, like, if she has this psychic connection, is the power hers or is the power the mom's? And then, but like the mom makes things fly across the room.
Right. Or slaps him. She slaps Sophie without touching her.
So there's a bit of a telekinesis thing going on. But again, you start to wonder, like, because there's this thing where Libby says, you know, so you've got power too. Like, oh, not me, just mama. And it's like, is that true? Like, do you have something? And you just start to wonder, like, you know,
Is it like a dual personality, and just one personality is being projected onto her, you know, comatose mom?
Right,
yeah.
And you just start to wonder, like, what, like, are they both powerful? Is one of them powerful? Is one leeching off the other? And it goes back to the whole mystery thing, and that's mm-hmm. why I like season one a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know if I have really anything much else to say.
I think that's really – what do you think now, seeing the first season, seeing the first two episodes of season two, where do you think it's going? Where would you like it to go? And what do you think, knowing that it's just going to be cut short?
Yeah, that's my big fear, is that there's going to be a lot of answers that aren't going to be given. There's going to be a lot of questions unanswered, because it's going to be a – take it up to second season and oh, the big cliffhanger and no yep. answers whatsoever, no conclusion. That is, I think, unfortunate. We do get to see at the beginning of the second season kind of where it's supposedly heading. There's obviously going to be this, but they spell it out, like you said, it's this battle between good and evil, and they show a clip of, you know, 10 years in the future when the atomic test goes off in the desert. The Trinity test, which is they happen to be in that very part of the world or something. What I thought it was interesting is that the, you know, management is saying we have to stop this, and we're like, well, apparently they fail because the Trinity test happened.
It happens.
World War II happens.
Right. And that's something the creator of the show, Daniel Knopf, talked about a lot. He goes, this is a – because the show is tagline like, you know, their battle, our future. And he goes, you know, even though this is a work of fiction, I set it in the real world, in that, you know, so people keep asking me, like, who won? He goes, well, look at the world. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And that's his answer. He goes, yeah, obviously he didn't stop the Trinity test, but he kind of left it open to interpretation of, it wasn't necessarily about stopping the use of the atom bomb. It was about stopping how it was used. So it leaves open to, did good win or did evil win? Because maybe it was going to be used kind of back to Star Trek of like, well, when does it get used? Who right. uses it first?
Mm-hmm.
So even though the show abruptly ends, you can kind of interpret it your own way.
I think I would be, and I doubt we'll see it in second season. And I think if it had continued, I would have been a little disappointed if it had like come down to this, like almost superhero battle between Justin and Ben or something, which is where I felt like it was sort of leading. They were both obviously, you know, exercising a little bit of their abilities, and you were getting an idea of Ben's ability. And like you were saying, apparently he can take and give life, and he can maybe stop the weather, and so maybe turning him into the superhero. And Justin was going to be the supervillain that was going to have to fight. And I guess, you know, I saw that in like a Hero season 3 or whatever it was when they went to the circus, and I think I would, oh my gosh, and that starred the guy that played the reporter, the radio guy.
Oh,
he was in that Hero season. If I'm not mistaken. Anyway, sorry.
It's okay.
Sidetrack. I think I would have been a little disappointed anyway if it comes down to just, you know, Avatar...
throwing fireballs.
Fireball, yeah.
Do you want me to spoil it? Or like half spoil it?
Yeah, spoil it? Yeah, go ahead.
It doesn't go full-blown superhero.
Okay.
It's not about like one guy like starts flying through the air and mm-hmm. using his power. It's more about them feeling strengthened by the power inside of them to confront the other. That's kind of where it heads in season two of like, hey, I've got this inside of me. I can conquer him now. And then the other one's like, oh, I've got it inside me. I can conquer him now. And it doesn't become mm-hmm. this whole like clashing of powers as much as it's still just the idea of a grown man is going to take on a young man.
I would have liked to have seen something more along the lines of just their ability to get people behind them, that it's the faith of others in them that would choose who wins the battle. How many people can Ben get behind just by trying to do good, trying to do right, even if he doesn't always have to – even though he may not have to do good things, mm-hmm. but he does the right things. Whereas Justin's like, no, I'll show you power and give you riches and power and follow me. And how people choose the sides, I guess, and who can choose or who can bring more people into their fold would be the decider.
And Justin becomes aware of that, and he really – you'll see what he does. I mean, he kind of grows his own small country. But they even deal with it on Ben's side a little bit going forward, and there's this line towards the end of season two where, you know, where Samson says something like, you know, they all think, you know, he's the Messiah. You're the real thing. Let's use that against him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good moment. I think this the whole end sequence of the last episode of season two is probably my favorite.
All right.
Yeah. Because I was rewatching that the other day because I every like few months I rewatch that whole, it's like the last 10 minutes of the show.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to go and watch the rest. It's 10 more episodes, 10 hours. I can, yeah, I was just kind of like throwing one up at the end of the night to watch, and that made it pretty easy. A little bit like you were Star Trek. It's not like you can really knock them out. They are 55 minutes of program because there's no commercials.
Right.
So you can't just knock as many out as you might like. But I will definitely finish the second season, and I'll let you know what I think of it. I appreciate you bringing it to my attention because it is not something I would have found myself watching otherwise.
Sure. Yeah, that's kind of where it's fallen now, people. It's
just because of the obscurity.
Yeah, very obscure, and it's become this like cult following kind of show where you just you know someone who watches it, and they make you watch it, and I'm one of those people.
No, I appreciate it because, I wouldn't have watched it otherwise, and I have enjoyed what I've watched. Even, you know, like, I think there are little – it could have been tweaked and maybe done differently. I won't say better, just it could have been done differently. And I think it's one of those shows that, you know, there are people going to be watching that are going to love every single minute of it, and there's going to be people like me like, I like all this and I like all that, but I wish they had done this. Yeah,
I'm kind of with you. There's definitely – parts that they could have really just tightened up and gotten you there quicker. And again, but I think that was just a style choice of like, we are going to do a slow burn. We are really going to drag this out because they kept doing this whole idea of a journey, and they wanted to be like, life is slow. Life doesn't happen all at once. And so there are episodes that I'm like, you don't necessarily want to skip them, but maybe skip scenes, like just kind of get, you know, when it cuts away from part of a story, you're like, go past this. That's just them arguing for 20 minutes.
I was just
going
to say, you just wanted to skip stuff because he says, oh, that doesn't matter. But then I'm really wondering, like, yeah, but
does it? Yeah. And then you're like, no, it didn't.
Yeah.
But you don't know that it didn't until you finish the whole episode.
It reminds me, jump back into like the sci-fi universe. It reminds me a little bit of Babylon 5. Did you happen to watch any Babylon 5?
No, didn't, unfortunately.
That was a series where you're watching it, and you don't realize how important something so minor that happens in like the first episode of season one, and then finally like in the fourth episode, and you don't even. There was times where you don't even realize it. You like you do a rewatch or something like that, and you're like, "That's what they meant."
And that's what this show is. So you know, I won't say go back and rewatch it, but if you do, you'll pick up a lot of stuff that you didn't notice just because it was subtly placed in the background, or it was a line that you thought was thrown away, or you just, you know, you're getting D before you got A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. So it's like that didn't make sense at the time, but it makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. Thank you again for bringing it up. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing, and I'll finish it off, even though I know I'm going to be in the end unsatisfied.
Yeah, I mean, every time I rewatch it, and I've probably watched this show from start to finish 5 times, maybe 6 times, and every time I do, I go, "All right, I'm not going to get upset when it ends." Yeah. And I always get upset when it ends.
I think this will probably be our last episode before the end of the year. So I wish everyone a happy new year. I don't know if it'll come out before or after Christmas and Hanukkah or anything, any other holidays that are going on. So I hope you had a good one, or I hope you have a good one, depending on when the episode drops. I don't have the calendar in front of me. Absolutely have an absolutely safe and fun new year. And we'll be back in 2017 with some more, hopefully some more fun topics. I hope you're enjoying what you've heard so far. any suggestions on anything you think we might like, movie, shows, anything, fire it our way. Timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. We'd be thrilled to hear from you. You can also join our Facebook group. We got a Timeshifters Facebook group. You can search for us and join up there. And any suggestions, I think it's going to do it. Matt, thank you very much.
Anytime.
And we will talk to you guys next time. Bye.
See you.